The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the AFB, their June newsletter. From Scholarship Region, a 25-year-old has just become the first deafblind Harvard Law grad. From the NFB and OPBC, the details of their upcoming conference. From Cool Blind Tech, a couple of articles, including the Space Felt app and the Access Now app. From iPhone Geeks, Android versus Apple. So let's get started. From the AFB, via Elizabeth Kumar, K-U-M-A-R, Doris, come celebrate with AFB. June is a special month for all of us at AFB. Spring is here, bringing with it the promise of hope and renewal. And it's Helen Keller's birthday month, a time when all of us here at AFB celebrate her remarkable achievements and guiding spirit. Helen paved the way for others to follow in her example of innovation, courage, and defying the odds. These same qualities guide us today and are at the very core of our mission, to create a world of no limits for people who are blind or visually impaired. During this celebratory month, we look forward to giving you a better look at the work we have been doing in research, programming, and advocacy, such as the launch of our AFB Talent Lab program, which trains web designers and engineers in foundational web accessibility and usability, as well as providing paid apprenticeships for participants who are blind or visually impaired. It is through the generous support of this community that we are able to do this important work, and we want to invite you to support us in our journey in the year ahead. Won't you join us? Hot link to donate today. There is still so much more to be accomplished, and we are excited for you to come along with us as we move into our second centennial of making an impact and changing lives. With gratitude, the AFB team. American Foundation for the Blind, 1401 South Clark Street, Suite 730, Arlington, Virginia, 22202, United States. From the NOPBC.org, 2022 NOPBC Conference at the NFB Convention. Each year, the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, NOPBC, hosts an annual conference within the National Federation of the Blind's annual convention. Federation members and friends of all ages will gather to learn and share, reconnect with old friends, and form new friendships. The NOPBC annual conference includes many sessions and workshops on a wide variety of interesting topics. We're gathering together in person. Please join us. The 2022 NOPBC conference will be held in person in New Orleans, Louisiana, July 5th through 10th, 2022, in conjunction with the annual convention of the National Federation of the Blind. The theme of our conference is sharing our core values, creating opportunities, raising expectations. 2022 NOPBC conference agenda outline. The 2022 NOPBC Annual Conference includes workshops. We hold concurrent sessions that address the needs of blind and low-vision children at different ages and with additional disabilities. This year, topics include CVI, cortical cerebral visual impairment, technology, tactile graphics, advocacy, remote instruction, independent and self-directed movement and travel, and transition, including financial planning. Youth Track is open to all blind and low vision students, children of blind adults, and sighted siblings aged 11 to 18. Pre-registration is required. Family Game Night, a great gathering of playing new or family favorite accessible games. Megan Benning, B-E-N-I-N-G, Memorial Fund Technology Giveaway. In loving memory of Megan Benning, the Megan Benning Memorial Fund Technology Giveaway will take place before our annual meeting. To be eligible for the drawing, the blind child must be 21 or younger, registered for the NOPBC conference, have a parent or guardian who is registered for the NOPBC conference. Each eligible child will receive 3 tickets for a chance to win. Thousands of dollars of technology will be given away. Exhibitor Open House. Learn the latest on technology and other organizational resources. NOPBC Annual Meeting. Kid Panel, Parent Power, Business Meeting, Elections, and more. Braille Book Fair. Browse tables of new and used Braille and print Braille books. Volunteers will box your books and deliver them to the post office for free matter shipment to your home. Books are free, and donations are encouraged to help support our Braille programs. IEP workshops. NOPBC registration. Please contact NOPBC President Carlton Walker at nopbcpres@gmail.com with any questions or for information about how to register without using PayPal. Until June 30th, it's $30 per person or $50 per family. Single registration includes NOPBC membership through December 31st, 2022. Single registration includes one annual subscription for Freedom Scientific software, JAWS, Fusion, or ZoomText. Family registration includes two memberships and two software subscriptions. After June 30th, including on-site registration will rise to $33 per person. Registration includes NOPBC membership through December 31, 2022. Registration includes one annual subscription for Freedom Scientific software, JAWS, Fusion, or ZoomText. Don't know why that was repeated. Please also see National Federation of the Blind Code of Conduct, Youth Program Participant Protection Policy, and 2022 National Convention Safety Protocols. Those three items are hot links on the website. I'm changing the source for my article on Haben Girma, G-I-R-M-A, the Harvard Law deafblind graduate. The interview with Guy Kawasaki, K-A-W-A-S-A-K-I, is much more informative than the Scholarship Region article was. So, Haben Girma at GuyKawasaki.com. Today's remarkable guest is Haben Girma. Haben was born in Oakland, California, to an immigrant Eritrean family. In her early childhood, she began to lose her eyesight and hearing. She graduated from Skyline High School in Oakland and went on to graduate magna cum laude from Lewis and Clark. After college, she obtained a law degree from Harvard Law School. She's the first deafblind person to achieve this distinction. After law school, she joined an organization called Disability Rights Advocates. She was part of the team that filed a lawsuit against Scribd, S-C-R-I-B-D, because its digital reading system did not accommodate blind people. President Obama named her to the White House Champions of Change. She received the Helen Keller Achievement Award from the American Federation for the Blind. She was on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list and a speaker for the Time 100 Talks. She's also the author of Haben, the Deafblind Woman Who Conquered Harvard Law. The interviewer is discussing the lag in the interview process going through a third party. Why can't we go from voice to Braille? Not that I want to eliminate the person helping you, but why can't we go from voice to Braille using AI and machine learning and all the good stuff? Haben Girma, oh, that already exists. It's absolutely possible. It's just that AI is not at a point where we can rely on it for professional, real-life, important things. So you can. There's so many text-to-speech, speech-to-text tools out there. But if you look at them, they make errors. They mistype names, such as my name, Haben. H-A-B-E-N is always misunderstood, and other important details are mixed up, and that's not something I want to rely on for professional settings. So that's why I don't rely on AI. Maybe in 10 years it'll be accurate enough to rely on, but right now it's not something I rely on. Moving further into the interview, Guy Kawasaki says, to show you how little I know, I've been demonstrating already, what's the proper and acceptable vernacular? Is quote-unquote disability the right word? Haben Girma, my recommendation is to always ask people, because everyone has different takes on this. Some people think disability is a dirty word and feel ashamed, and they will do everything they can to avoid saying the word. They will say special needs, differently abled, and other extreme linguistic efforts to avoid saying the word disability. For me, I associate the word disability with civil rights, Americans with Disabilities Act. It's not Americans with Special Needs Act, so there is a stigma associated with the word disability. It's the stigma that's the problem. The word itself is not the problem, and more advocates today are celebrating disability pride. That word disability connects us to civil rights and connects us to other disabled people and builds this community of disabled people across the disability community. So deaf-blind, people who use wheelchairs, people with psychiatric disabilities, it's incredibly diverse. Different races, different ethnicities, different languages. So if you use hashtag disability on Twitter, you'll find a variety of different voices. Guy Kawasaki, so do you think the word disability is tied to civil rights as opposed to charity, empathy, or sympathy? Haben Girma, empathy is a good thing. Charity has its place in society. Disability should not always be tied to charity. I argue disability is the opportunity for innovation. If you can't do something one way, find another way to do it. And that an other alternative way of doing things can benefit not just disabled people, but also non-disabled people. And who knows what exciting innovations you'll find that moves our entire society forward. She continues further in, I want to add that there's this common thing of framing disability experiences as overcoming the disability. And I want the world to know that for me, I have not had to overcome my disability. I'm still disabled. I'm still deafblind. The biggest barrier for me has been ableism. Ableism is the widespread practice of framing disabled people as inferior to non-disabled people. So, for example, my disability does not stop me from practicing law. A big part of law is reading. I can read in Braille. Reading in Braille gives me access. There are computers and software that quickly convert printed text to Braille. So blindness is not the problem. But when institutions like courthouses refuse to provide materials in accessible, readable formats, that becomes the barrier. I have the ability to read, but when society puts out content that's inaccessible, that's the barrier. Guy Kawasaki, but you had to and continue to have to overcome those barriers. Haben Girma, yes, I have to overcome ableism, which is not what society traditionally frames the disability experience. Usually it's framed as the disabled person has to overcome their own disability to be successful. But for me, my disability has not been my barrier. It's ableism that's been my barrier. I know you like surfing, and you've shared many surfing stories. I read your memoir, by the way, and I know you were surfing in Santa Cruz, which is where I first learned to surf. But when I first started and I was talking to different surf schools, they would say, we've never heard of a deafblind surfer. We don't know if we can teach you. We've never heard of a deafblind surfer. Then I found one school that said, let's figure this out. Surfing is a tactile experience. You're feeling the water. You're riding the waves. It's very physical. So the instructor took the time to figure out, how do we make this accessible? What can we change? What can we teach? That's inclusion. So I hope more people in society, from surf schools to tech developers, learn to treat disability as an opportunity for innovation. If you're not sure how to do something, or you've never heard of a disabled person doing a specific activity, that's an opportunity to deepen your understanding of that field. The organization that first took me surfing is called Ride a Wave. They're based in Santa Cruz, and it's a group of volunteers that does tandem surfing. They focus on kids with disabilities, and they will take kids out on tandem boards. Kids with different kinds of disabilities, mobility disabilities. They have tandem boards with seats on them. So if someone can't stand, they can sit and still experience the process of being out on the water and surfing. For so many people, the beach is not accessible, and communities don't do the work of creating ramps down to the beach or having support systems so that you can go and enjoy this rare and precious part of our planet. Ride a Wave is an amazing organization, and there are other great groups that are working to make beaches accessible. Later, she continues, so the American education system is incredibly broken. I was very lucky to go to a school where there were teachers willing to do the work of removing ableism, removing barriers. If I had gone to a school one city over, chances are I would have probably failed high school, and I doubt I would have ever gone to college. I'd probably be among the many disabled people who are unemployed and underemployed. I know many deafblind students who tried going through the education system in California, and the schools refused to provide books in Braille. And because they didn't have access to books, books are so critical to learning, yet so many schools deny access to books. Only about 10% of blind students learn Braille. Most schools do not teach blind students Braille. So there are so many barriers in the United States education system. My story is an example of what could happen if the barriers are removed. But for the most part, those barriers are still there. Guy Kawasaki, can you give us an overall assessment of, in 2021, where we are in terms of ableism? Haben Girma, we're in a terrible place. It's depressing. But during the pandemic, there have been so many stories of experts saying how we need to sacrifice the lives of disabled people. If there's a shortage of health resources, then disabled people, do they even have good quality of life? They'll go back to the back of the line of resources if there's a shortage on resources. This has been coming up in many states throughout the United States, and disabled lives have been lost because of ableism. The assumption that our lives are not valuable. And this assumption exists in our healthcare system, and it's come up again and again during the pandemic. Guy Kawasaki, this is a rare moment of silence for me, but are you kidding me? What logic is a disabled person's life not as valuable as any other person's life? You probably don't want to, obviously you don't agree, but what kind of thought train that may be giving to them too much credit? How would you arrive at such a conclusion? Hub and Girma, people who have this point of view, it's hard for me to explain since I don't agree with it, but it seems to come from a place of fear. So, for example, people have told me, gosh, if I were deaf and blind, I'd kill myself. There's no way I'd live like that. Guy Kawasaki, oh my God, are you kidding me? Hob and Girma, no, I'm not kidding. This is something a lot of disabled people hear over and over again, and it comes from a place of fear, assuming that all the things you love and all the things that bring you joy would disappear. If you could not walk or could not see or lost one of your other abilities, lots of disabled people, however, come with alternative solutions. They find ways to do things that bring them joy. Humans are inherently adaptive. We adapt, but if you're only coming from a place of fear, you're not thinking of adaptation and alternative techniques. You're just operating and speaking from fear. Later on, Guy Kawasaki asks, what would you like changed in the ADA? Not without other people like you. How would you make it better? So there's an assumption in the tech community, says Hob and Girma, that the ADA does not apply to technology websites, apps, robots. That's not true. The ADA was passed in 1990. The Internet as we know it didn't exist the way we think of it back in 1990. However, the law was written to be broad and evolve with society. They've already had multiple cases applying the ADA to modern tech, and I worked on one of those cases. I worked on National Federation of the Blind versus Scribd. Blind readers wanted access to books and documents on the Scribd library. And originally, Scribd, S-C-R-I-B-D, argued that they thought they didn't have to make their library accessible. My team disagreed. It went to court, and the judge ruled that the ADA does apply to online businesses like Scribd. Guy Kawasaki, just for clarity, people are listening to this. You're talking about S-C-R-I-B-D, right? The plaintiff. Defendant. Excuse me, defendant. I only went to law school for 10 days. What can I say? That's your excuse for everything, isn't it, Guy? So the ADA made a promise that just disabled people are equal and deserve full access to society. That promise has not been fulfilled. That fault does not lie with the law. The fault lies on the different businesses that fail to comply with the ADA. The burden is on plaintiffs like the National Federation of the Blind to bring these cases, and it's exhausting to have that burden. It's so much easier if the businesses choose to make their services accessible rather than waiting for lawsuits. There are over 1 billion disabled people around the world. That's a huge market. So if you invest in making your business accessible, you'll reach more people. You'll tap into over 1 billion potential consumers, potential listeners, larger audience. So it's in your best interest to invest in accessibility. Guy Kawasaki, let's suppose that there are people listening to this and they're totally relating to what you're saying because they have a quote-unquote disability or somehow they're having to overcome external factors. The problem isn't them, it's something external. What is your advice to them? So you're asking, what is my advice to disabled people who are struggling with ableism? Is that the question? Yes. Having Girma, so if you are out there living with a disability and struggling with ableism, my advice is to make sure you take breaks for yourself. Figure out what are the things that bring you joy. Take breaks to recharge, and then come back to fight for justice. It's exhausting work to continue fighting ableism. It feels like we're swimming in it all the time. Every day there are new barriers. So a lot of people are trying to get vaccines during the pandemic. A lot of vaccine registration websites are inaccessible to blind people. So even just trying to get a vaccine, you come up with another barrier. So take breaks. Recharge builds community. Have allies who can step in and fight for you if you're too tired and overwhelmed with all the barriers to do the fighting. And build up your skills. Study the ADA. Study advocacy skills. Keep learning from activists who have been working on this for many, many years. The interviewer concludes, I hope that Hobbin's story inspired you as much as inspired me. inspired you to support the 1 billion people with disabilities, inspired you to support laws and regulations that will make the world a more equal place, and inspired you to see the awesome potential of disabled people. An action item that came out of this episode for me is a commitment to creating high-quality transcripts. So for the past few weeks, I hope you've noticed that the quality of our transcripts has significantly improved. I'm Guy Kawasaki. This is Remarkable People. My thanks to Mitch Jackson for making me aware of Haben and for even helping me make the interview happen. My thanks to Jeff Sia, S-I-E-H, and Peg Fitzpatrick for making another remarkable episode of Remarkable People. Until next time, mahalo and aloha. I'm also going to abbreviate the iPhoneGeeks.com article, Android is Great, But This Is Why I Can't Quit Apple, by the iPhone Geeks staff. Here at iPhone Geeks, we can name many reasons why Android beats Apple's mobile operating system any day. Google's alternative offers a more open platform, choice, value, versatility, and customization, to name a few things. But if Android is so much better, what keeps iOS users hooked to iPhones and iPads? I know I'm getting ahead of myself. What the heck is continuity? Let's reel it back a little. Continuity is this wondrous, magical, beautiful feature Apple started rolling out in 2014, around the same time I was getting sucked into the Apple ecosystem at the ripe age of 16. I was, of course, already the proud owner of a MacBook Pro and an old iPod I refused to let go of, besides my dad's iPhone that I would still argue was mine by right of inheritance. No matter how new you are to Apple or how inept at technology, every Apple user has used continuity at some point in their life. Some just don't know that's what it is. This magical function is what helps you work seamlessly across your Apple devices without having to do inelegant things, such as mailing yourself files, messaging yourself text to paste on another device, or even manually typing in the OTP you received on your iPhone into your Mac, because your Mac fills it in automatically. AirDrop transfers? Continuity. iCloud syncing of notes, files, and more? Continuity. Handoff to work on one task across multiple devices. Continuity. Answering phone calls and texts on your Mac or iPad. It's continuity. Copy-pasting using Universal Clipboard across devices. Yep, continuity. Instant hotspot the moment your Wi-Fi fails you. You guessed it, continuity. Sidecar, which lets you use your iPad as a second screen. It's obviously continuity. Unlocking your Mac or iPhone using your Apple Watch. What else could it be but continuity? I was going to keep this list to 4 or 5 points, but it got out of hand. I could go on and on. This feature is just so freaking good. All it needs is that your Apple devices are within reasonable proximity to each other and have Bluetooth and Wi-Fi connectivity turned on. Apple is a genius when it comes to its ecosystem. It's exclusionary to other brands, which honestly sucks, and often makes me want to get out of the Apple bubble, but also makes it so convincing to just stay. I have, of course, thought about switching many times. When Samsung brought foldable and flip phones back into the picture, I had wondered for a wild second if getting out of the Apple ecosystem would be worth it. Then I decided to be rational and wait for Apple to slowly catch up, as always, so I wouldn't have to give up continuity and the perks it brings me with my Apple Watch. I guess we know where the cards lay for now. Curse you, Apple, you win again. From CoolBlindTech.com, this app allows you to search, rate, and discover the accessibility of places around your city, posted June 6th. Access Now is a mobile platform that allows anyone, regardless of their ability, to search for, rate, and discover information about the accessibility of places and experiences around their city. Access Now is sharing accessibility information about places around the world. Search for specific places like a restaurant, hotel, or store, or browse the map to see what is nearby with the accessibility features you require. If info isn't already on our map, you can add it yourself and contribute to our worldwide community. Filter the map by a category and tags and find the access that you need now. How do you add a review to the Access Now app? To add a review on the app, simply search the place you want to rate on the map. Once you've selected a place, there is an Add Review button. You will then be asked to rate the place, whether it is accessible, partially accessible, or not accessible. Select all the relevant accessibility tags and provide a personal review. How do you choose the right accessibility rating or tag when reviewing a place? If you're not sure of how to rate or tag a place, you can refer to the Access Now Definitions page for a full list of all the different terms used to describe aspects of accessibility on the Access Now app. Piece of cake emoji. Where can we get the Access Now app? The app is available for iOS and Android. Posted back on April 25th, SpaceFelt releases labeling solution for the visually impaired. Vision loss can have a significant impact on one's ability to perform even the basic tasks. Simple activities such as picking the right condiments from the kitchen cabinet, identifying medicines, reading numbers on a credit card, or picking matching clothes at most times require the assistance of a sighted person. The startup, Grailmaker Innovations, has developed SpaceFelt, a tagging and labeling app for persons with visual impairment. Using it, the user can tag, label, and identify objects around them independently. How do you use SpaceFelt? SpaceFelt is a smartphone-based innovation that helps to label and identify everyday objects at home and workplaces. It is of two parts, a set of waterproof adhesive tags and a mobile app to scan these tags. You glue the tag to anything you want to identify. Scan the tag with the app and record a text or audio description of the item. The next time you scan the label, the recording is read or played back. Where can we get the app? SpaceFelt is currently in beta, but will be available for Android devices on the Play Store. Where can we get more info? For more information, contact SpaceFelt at support@spacefelt.com or call 918-520-818-879. Also posted June 6th, Hey Sonos now has a voice assistant that lets you control playback on Sonos speakers. Sonos announced the launch of its very own voice assistant. The new Sonos voice control feature is now available on select Sonos speakers with built-in microphones, like the Sonos Move and Sonos Beam. Although these speakers already support digital assistants like Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant, this new feature was built specifically with Sonos products in mind. The company also developed its assistant with privacy as a priority, so customers don't have to worry about their voices being recorded. What is Sonos Voice Control? Sonos Voice Control is the company's new voice assistant feature that lets customers control select Sonos speakers through spoken commands. Once set up, users can say "Hey Sonos" to activate the feature and initiate a command. With Sonos Voice Control, you can ask your speaker to play music, adjust volume, skip tracks, move playback to a different room, group devices, and more. Some commands also work over Bluetooth, so you can control portable Sonos speakers when you're on the go. Sonos even teamed up with Emmy-nominated actor Giancarlo Esposito to bring the voice of its digital assistant to life. Esposito is best known for his roles in Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, and The Mandalorian. Unlike Alexa or Google Assistant, however, Sonos Voice Control is strictly designed to manage playback and music. This means you can't use it for other common digital assistant functions like answering questions or checking the weather. Does Sonos Voice Control record your voice? Sonos says that its voice assistant works locally, meaning that it processes your requests on the device itself and never records or saves your voice to the cloud. What speakers include support for Sonos Voice Control? Sonos Voice Control is available on all of the company's smart speaker models. This includes the Sonos One, Sonos Move, Sonos Roam, Sonos Beam, and Sonos Arc. I've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this web program is intended for people who are blind and impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.